Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there. Welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. I'm Annika Rice.
And I'm Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club. Throughout this series, we'll be sharing our love of wine and travel with a host of special guests.
From comics, actors, novelists and more, we'll be hearing about their travelling adventures, giving you a real feel for each region and, more importantly, a taste of it, thanks to Will and his stash of wine.
We're here in London Bridge, our own two-storey wine bar, The Tap and Bottle. It has a lively, bustling atmosphere and plenty of character. The perfect spot to pour the wine and have a good time.
Hello, you lovely lot. Welcome to a brand new series of Wine Times. I'm Annika Rice. It's very lovely to be here with you, Will, because I know you've done this series before without me. So I'm the newbie here and I'm, you know, looking forward to it. And throughout the series, we'll be sharing our love of wine and travel with a host of special guests. They're all great travellers. We've handpicked them to tell us about their adventures in a country that means a lot to them. And hopefully you'll get a real feel for each region and, more importantly, a taste of it. But for this episode, you've got just Will and I, and we're recording at a new spot in London. It's called The Tap and Bottle. It's a wine bar by London Bridge. And Will, I'm pretty excited about being cozied up here with you for the next 12 weeks.
Oh, I know. It's lovely. It's such a quintessential London wine vibe with the exposed brick, which just adds to the atmosphere as we pour the wine and enjoy ourselves.
Oh, just that word, pour the wine. I know, we are right in it because Borough Market's just in front of us. There's a train line that goes just behind us. We could be getting the 6:82 from London Bridge any second now, I think. But anyway, we'll work around the noise. But if you do hear a train, that's what's going on here. I am thrilled, as I said, because, you know, a day in the office being a wine bar, I mean, can't get any better than that. So, Will, for this first episode, I'm going to be your guest and talk about Croatia today.
That's absolutely perfect, Annika, because actually, strangely, it's one of the one places on the wine route which I've never been to either.
It's a disgrace.
I know. I've tasted their delicious wines. All of my friends go there on holiday now. So I'm hoping to learn a lot from you, actually.
Well, hopefully you will, because I've been there a few times. And also, it will so inspire you. I promise you, you'll be booking your trip by the third wine. My travel bug started very young, because when I was a teenager, I joined the BBC on one of their training courses straight out of A-levels. And I was sent to work for the World Service. And I'd come from sort of Croydon High School, you know, A-levels, and didn't know much about the world. My perspective shifted in about a day and a half, because suddenly I was looking outwards and it was really thrilling. One of my jobs was to get the great Mark Tully, who used to be the Indian correspondent. My job as this 19-year-old was to get him on the line. And you have to think, this is back in the day, you know, over nearly 50 years ago, before you had Wi-Fi and, you know, phone lines you could use. And you had, there was a really old-fashioned line in the studio. And my job was to go, hello, Delhi, this is London. And it was just thrilling. You know, it was a very, very informative part of my life.
And in many ways, you got a taste, what I think, of the golden age of romantic travel. I mean, I know you know, everyone tends to eulogise the decade they were born in, but the 80s, it felt like, you know, you had the Concorde going. It was pre-internet, so the only images we got were, you know, on the television and that sort of visual feast. And I remember as a child just visualising this globe. People like Mark Tully, he really brought it home to you.
And they were just voices. Yeah. You couldn't see them. Anyway, I was so enamoured with the East, particularly the Far East, that I took a job and went out to work in Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah,
so now I'm about 20.
Yes.
And I get a job working as a journalist out there in current affairs. I'm the newsreader and I'm reporting on the boat people arriving from Vietnam. I work in refugee camps. I'm sent all over the Far East from Bali to Singapore, Australia. As my job, you know, I mean, that's the job of a lifetime,
yeah,
isn't it, really?
Absolutely.
It was amazing. And when I came back to Britain, eventually my career took such a swerve because I was entrenched in current affairs and suddenly I ended up presenting Treasure Hunt, which you remember, Will, because you were talking about that.
Well, we used to gather as a family. I think it went out on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
I remember in the drawing room of the house where my parents still live, watching you on Treasure Hunt. I used to love it.
Did you?
You used to do impressions.
But again, everyone did impressions. I couldn't go past the telly without Spitting Image, literally. Once I gave birth on Spitting Image to my child with Kenneth Kendall going, okay, Annie, baby, are you in the birth canal now? It's time to come out. And out came a little baby and a little tiny film crew. Charming. Anyway,
I think unless you live through that, you know, for the younger generation listening, this is pre-internet, it was like the National Theatre, wasn't it? Half the nation sat down and watched that.
Millions of people. And also at that time, you have to remember that women on telly were largely either behind a news desk or were draped over a car in a pink bikini selling something on the Golden Shot, or Benny Hill was chasing around someone in a bikini. And suddenly to have a woman centre of the action, in control, calling the shots. You know, that was mind-blowing for a lot of people. I think it was an extraordinary rebirth of telly in a way. It changed a lot of things.
In that incredible helicopter, was that?
Yeah, helicopter. But the very first programme I did on Treasure Hunt, Bali. We went and did one in Bali and then Singapore. So even though I'd left that Far East region, I got sent back immediately. And then I did Wish You Were Here, the holiday programme for years,
Judith Chalmers.
Chalmers. And I used to do 10 trips a year. So I'd go everywhere from the Okavango Delta to Malta to wherever. So my travel credentials are quite powerful.
Yeah.
But my wine credentials are slightly lacking.
Well,
which is why I'm very excited, because I've been to all these amazing regions and I realise now, what a waste that you didn't come along with me.
The great thing about the wine route is it does stretch across the world. You know, I've been lucky enough to travel, you know, travel the world through wine. And I always say that the real privilege of wine is you're meeting farmers. So you're going to these beautiful places. So if you sort of jet into South America, you immediately whisk up to the vineyards. And then you get to go into people's houses because they invariably, it's a very social industry. They invariably, you know, invite you back for supper. And that's a real privilege. So what do you drink at home, Annika? I mean, did you have a drink every night?
I drink red wine. My main incentive to do this entire podcast was that I wanted you to help me re-find white wine again. Lost it as a taste. I mean, Cloudy Bay, again, going back a few decades, that lovely buttery Chardonnay, I loved. And then I've just been diverted, whether it's because I was told that red wine is actually one of your five a day and really good for you. So I'm very happy to drink
that. Well, the funny thing is, Annika, and when this goes out, the column will have been published, but my next column is on this. You know, I get asked quite a lot of questions from readers. And obviously the question I get asked the most is, what is a good wine? But I get a lot is, I like wine, but I only drink red.
Yeah.
Can you show me why? And I think it must be the citrusy acidity or the tanginess.
Too sugary to me.
Too sugary. It could be the sugary. I mean, especially with Cloudy Bay. So you mentioned the Chardonnay, but they're more famous for their Sauvignon. That sort of,
yes, the Sauvignon.
Sort of that jet stream of gooseberryness.
Yeah. Yeah.
But actually, I think reds are just more mellow. They're more approachable. I always think that like a nice juicy Merlot is the equivalent of like a cafe latte.
Can I just say a juicy Merlot is my favourite red wine.
Well, perfect.
There. So, but if you can get me off the, I mean, I'm here to learn.
Yeah.
I'm saying. And the lovely thing is, I'm working on the basis. I've been to more places than you have.
Yes.
You've drunk more wine than I have. You show me yours, I'll show you mine. And this is going to be a very happy 12 weeks.
And I'm kind of hoping what you said, that you've got a good relationship with wine then. So
yeah,
you
it's
open
very
it.
Friendly.
Yeah.
I have a friendly relationship with wine. I would say most practically every evening of my life, I have a glass of red. A juicy Merlot.
A juicy. And would you say you're a connoisseur, though? I mean, not at all.
Though a good friend of mine was John Avery.
Really?
I'm very friendly with the Avery family.
For the listener, Avery's is a fantastic independent wine merchant in Bristol, now actually owned by the parent company of the Sunday Times Wine Club. By the way, we're celebrating 50 years this month. John Avery sort of pioneered bringing back wines direct from the estate in France to his cellars in Bristol. Quite a lot of people do that now, but back then it was really pioneering days. And he imported the greatest Merlot of them all, Petrus, from Pomerol and Bordeaux. I don't think we'd be tasting Petrus on this particular podcast because it's thousands of pounds a bottle.
And we know I'm going to love it. Have we got a really expensive one?
It's about
5,000. Have we got one that is 5,000 pounds?
I could organise that.
So, Will, now, in today's episode, we're exploring the wines of Croatia. Now, that's a particularly special place for me because I've been a few times for holiday and work. And in fact, I filmed one of the challenges there for Challenge Annika. But for those of you listening who haven't been to Croatia, it actually lies in Southeast Europe. Its coast is entirely on the Adriatic Sea, but it borders Slovenia to the northwest, Hungary to the northeast, Serbia to the east, Bosnia and Herzegovina and Montenegro to the southeast. I'm very excited about our first region because you haven't been to Croatia. And I was talking before about all my travels with Treasure Hunt and living in Hong Kong. And then the other series I did, Challenge Annika, we often went to areas abroad and we went to Romania quite famously and worked on a Romanian orphanage and a Malawi refugee camp. And one of the countries we went to was Croatia. And that sounds a weird subject for a challenge because you think of challenge as being somewhere where you go and help a community rebuild itself. And we forget that the homeland war from 1991 to 95 left the country with billions of pounds worth of damaged infrastructure, over 20,000 people killed. It was a desecrated country. So the Red Cross asked me and the Challenge Programme to get involved with rebuilding a school in Pakrac. There'd been a battle known as the Pakrac Clash in 1991, and much of the town had been completely devastated. And so we did an appeal in the UK. We got over £1 million worth of aid donated, which in those days was a lot. We had a huge convoy of trucks, and we went and we rebuilt this school, and it was... Well, I watched it last night, Will, and I found it very poignant because nothing was taped in those days. Yes. So I found it on YouTube and I actually spoke to my sons and said, what you don't know is when I was filming that, I actually left a note at my hotel to you in case I didn't make it out alive because it was, here's a train.
Yeah, you can hear that.
Nice warm train going past. Because it was, we were in a sort of, post-war, but there were still snipers trained on us from the hillside. We were under the protection of the United Nations. So I didn't know, I had a real moment of whether I'd get home, but it was a lovely project to do. I loved the people. So I saw Croatia at a very low ebb, and then it seemed very surreal sort of 2 decades later as a family to go on a boat trip around the islands, which sounds weird to even say that in the same sentence. So it was a surreal juxtaposition.
But it's nice that it comes back,
Exactly. And it's such a beautiful country. Yeah. I honestly, genuinely can say it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. There are dozens of islands scattered off the Dalmatian coast. Actually, all the villages still make wine by hand. There's a huge wine producing region. So wine wasn't on my mind when I first went, but I would like you to tell me what I missed.
I think we need to start with our first wine. I get a lot of questions from readers asking me about Croatian wine because it's a big holiday hotspot, isn't it?
And all the islands, Hvar, Vis, Korkala, they all produce this beautiful... Oh, gosh, now, this is the bit I've been waiting for.
Pour over. Here we are, look at this.
This is a rosé.
Glorious sort of salmon pink colour.
Isn't it?
As you said, I think viticulture has gone back, to the ancient Greeks. And you mentioned Hvar, I think. But, I think that's the longest continuously farmed vineyard in the world is in Croatia. It goes back to the 4th century. We don't see a lot of Croatian wine in the UK. In fact, all the wines today are from the same estate, but they are completely different styles. This is one of Croatia's, it could be Croatia's oldest winery. founded by, or certainly it can trace its roots back to the 13th century, to 1232 by Cistercian monks. And it's called the Kučevo Winery. And we're in eastern Croatia, so we're in the sort of Slovenian highlands.
Yeah.
If you think of a map in your mind, you've got Hungary above you and you've got Bosnia below you, and you've got that wonderful thick forest there. Mm. And it's very high. So the vineyards here have altitude, which is the key for making cool, crisp white wine, which I know Annika does.
No, but funny enough, rosé, yeah. I like.
Yes.
Is it just the colour that's telling my brain it's different?
Absolutely, there is that. I mean, and I've referenced
how
this
malleable
before.
Am I? I'm ashamed of my brain.
Your eye, as soon as it sees the colour, is already alerting your
taste buds
in your brain. Yeah.
It's taking me on holiday as I taste a rosé. I wouldn't drink rosé at home so much, but it's...
No, so the great thing about Croatia,
can I just say, ladies and gentlemen, Will has picked his glass up and then puts it down. I am desperate to have a sip of this. Can we just...
But right, like its neighbour Italy and to a certain extent Portugal, there are hundreds of different grape varieties to learn. Sorry, Annika.
I did it again.
And I just wanted to say that this is a Pinot Noir-based blend. Ooh, so it's grape variety Burgundy. Yes, let's have a sip. So let's have a look at it. So that pale...
Still, it has not crossed my lips. This, I'm glazing over. Foreplay. I'm going to call it your wine foreplay, but it's gone on too long, Will. Cheers.
Cheers.
Do we do that?
Of course we can. Yeah. In fact, it might be better to hold the stem.
Oh, for God's sake. We still haven't had a sip. Why hold the stem?
Well, because then you get a better drink.
Okay.
Sorry.
And now we're going in?
Yeah, now we're going in. So we've had a look at the colour.
It's not, though. He's still got it round his nose.
Have a slurp.
Thank you. I'm absolutely knackered after that foreplay. That's really delicious. Oh, gosh. Mm. Will's spitting it out.
I'm spitting.
Downing my...
Only because I've never mastered the art of sort of speaking and drinking.
Have you not?
On air.
I'll tell you. That is bringing back a sort of lovely memory because on this next trip I was telling you about where we went round the islands, we were on a luxury gullet, which couldn't be more, you know, it was just beautiful going from Dubrovnik to Split via all these tiny islands. And the boat was the size of a small hamlet. I mean, literally 85 feet of gleaming mahogany. North. Five double ensuite bedrooms. Took my sons and their partners, and it's honestly the best family holiday I've ever had because you're trapped on this boat. There's no escape. No one can go off and go and want to do something different in the evening. You're just together. So you just get into that lovely rhythm of swimming and eating and a lot of drinking. And, oh, my goodness. It's
and as you say, sort of turquoise waters.
Turquoise waters and the
small harbours.
The, you know, when we arrived in Dubrovnik, everything was like being in a film set. You know, there'd be this sort of stunning yellow light sloping onto the limestone streets, which are buffed. It's buffed marble.
Yeah.
It's utterly beautiful. I'd got my paints out. I was sort of painting nonstop. And then restaurants spilling out onto every inch of the pavement.
Fantastic.
But, you know, perpendicular paths rising up to the sort of beautiful mauve hills in the dusk. And we found a tiny slit in the thick ramparts and climbed through to the buzzer bar. Buzza would probably be better, which sort of clung to a cliff. And I will never forget that icy glass of rosé I had then. I've no idea what it was, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry I've disappointed you. The whole thing about travelling through Croatia is slightly mystical and wonderful because of this extraordinary history. I mean, there was an island called Vis, which from the 1950s right up to 1989, it served as a Yugoslav military base before the war. So it's completely preserved from development. So you go there and it's extraordinary. You are hundreds of years ago. We decided we'd hire mopeds because it was where Tito hid in the war.
The Yugoslavian...
The submarines leader. Hidden in rock faces, and we got on these mopeds. Only two of my sons wanted to do it. The others all had a friend that had a terrible accident on a moped. So we were a bit sneering and went, and off we went, channeling our whatever. And we looked for the grave and we visited vineyards. And then the inevitable happened. I fell off the moped.
Oh, no.
I had quite a bad accident. And I came to, slightly concussed, I came to, Will, you've got kids, haven't you? I came to on the roadside with my two sons. Mum, we love you. Stay with us, Mum. We love you. So honestly, I was fine, but I kept it going for slightly longer because I was just loving. It was the most spiritual experience I've ever had. They were going, Mum, we love you so much. Stay with us. And so I just milked it for a bit longer, and then we had to go to the hospital and patch me up.
You didn't break anything?
I didn't break anything. Christ. It was just very, very sort of dramatic, the whole thing. But I was writing a travel piece at the time, so it made a great, you know, paragraph for the travel piece. So you always like the extreme experience, don't you?
So I imagine once you've landed in one of these sort of, you know, hidden harbours, and you've swam ashore, or you've taken a jet ski ashore.
Jet ski, no, did you say the word jet ski? We'd be in our luxury gullet and we would be eased onto the jetty.
Yeah, and I suppose it doesn't matter where you go, you just choose the nicest table in the harbour. And this is the sort of wine that you want to order, isn't it? Just order something local, something you'd sort of chill. It has sort of layers of apple-y, peachy fruit.
No, it is absolutely delicious.
That would go so well with just a grilled bit of fish with some herbs.
Would it? This is Wine Times with Annika Rice.
And Will Lyons.
We'll be back with more great wine and conversations before you even get a chance to top up your glass.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, I think it's time for our second
one. Yeah, let's go.
We've sort of whetted our palate.
Oh, we're white now.
So white?
Right, let's watch what happens here.
I opened them before. Same estate.
Okay.
Just...
That's massive.
I think the producer will finish that off.
She's already had the rosé.
Maximo Oro. So this is the Cuchivert estate, as I was saying, dates back to the 14th century. But we are, if you're just looking in your mind's eye, Venice is towards the east. I think we're 350 miles directly east of Venice. So actually, you could drive from Venice. It'll take about 6 hours. And this is one of Croatia's most famous grape varieties, probably its most planted grape variety, which is called Grazvina, also known as Welsh Riesling, although not from Wales. And this has a little bit of Chardonnay blended in. So they've got that sort of international grape varieties like Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, which I think just gives it that sort of creamy, oaky character. Sorry.
The four players started.
The four players going, and you've got to stop me.
You do your thing. I might just go and do some shopping. Yeah. Come back in about half an hour.
Let's have a slurp. You were saying earlier, weren't you?
Yeah.
You weren't, that you weren't too keen on white wine anymore.
Yeah.
Let's have a see if you like this one.
It's only going in the mouth now.
Oh, I really like that. I love the texture of that. And
it is. I like
oiliness.
It is oily, yeah. Isn't it? I do really like the oiliness. Yeah. I have to say.
What do you think about Chardonnay? Because Chardonnay is the most ubiquitous white grape variety. And this has a little bit of Chardonnay blended in. I always say that for people that don't like Chardonnay, because there used to be in the 80s, that ABC club, anything but Chardonnay.
I know. What was it?
It was just snobs. Because actually there is a lot of Chardonnay out there. But I
Why would Chardonnay be unfashionable?
So it's quite easy
too
to grow.
Ubiquitous.
Yeah, it's too ubiquitous. Quite all you need is a bit of
like
heat at
Carver,
the end of
it. Yeah, a bad name.
At the end of the growing season. But the greatest Chardonnay in the world sells for thousands of pounds a bottle. I've just come back, as you know, sailing across the Atlantic on the QM2. And I was giving a lunch and learn about Burgundy. And we're talking about Chardonnay. And I was saying this exact story. I was saying, you know, anyone ignores Chardonnay. The greatest one in the world comes from a vineyard called Morrochet. And it costs thousands of pounds a bottle. And there in front of me was a gentleman who'd ordered a bottle of Morrochet. I couldn't believe it. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, there is a bottle here for you to have a look at. Because this was thousands
of pounds.
And
he was drinking it. Did you become his best friend? Did you get a sip?
I became his best friend.
Yeah.
I didn't have a sip because I thought that was inappropriate. But I took a sniff and the smell.
Could have just had a sip.
But then later in the week, he shared some incredible wines with me.
I mean,
but
if you can afford that sort of price, you don't mind someone having just a sip, do you?
And there was a honeymoon couple next to him, and they were sharing it. And I thought, but again, I had to present. So, but I like this. It's sort of light, crisp, and dry.
I like the oiliness. We had a very good bottle of wine. I remember in Split, which was a bit of a spit.
Sorry, I'm spitting away.
While I'm talking about Split, we had a most memorable final meal. We were all very sad that we were leaving. We went to Split, which is the second largest city in Croatia, and we were stumbling around Diocletian's palace, you know, just hordes of people, which after the tranquility of the islands, just we were like rabbits caught in the headlights. We didn't know what to do. And we clocked a man in a trilby who was sitting on the cathedral steps, and he had a sign saying graduate tour, you know, just in front of him. And we stopped and we worked on the basis that, you know, there were graduates available in our little group. And he was amazing. He took us for 3 hours around Split. He drew maps of the Roman Empire for more like four hours, actually. After nearly 3,000 years of history, we knew everything about Croatia. We knew about the perfect Venetian four-point symmetry. We knew David Bowie's favourite sculptor, Ivan Mestrovic. And I was telling him about our challenge, which I mentioned earlier when I'd been to Croatia at a very different point of their history. And he was very moved, this guide. And he randomly gave me a bullet as a souvenir of the Homeland War. It begs the question what he was doing with that bullet. It was a Kalashnikov
bullet.
Bullet, live bullet he gave me. And I just put it in my handbag. But anyway, and as you know, I was writing a piece, a travel piece, and I had the perfect journalistic gift at the airport because I was arrested because it showed up on security. They found a live bullet at the bottom of my handbag, and I didn't know what to say, and I was separated. My kids had to wave me off. I was taken off. I was searched. I was questioned. And honestly, it was only because it was a Sunday, because eventually a woman came out and went, "You're very lucky it's a Sunday, because we're going to let you go because we want to go home now."
What year was this, Annika?
2015 or something.
Yeah, so it was after.
Yes. So I associate Croatia with quite a lot of drama. I mean, I've fallen off moped, gone to hospital. I've been arrested and I've nearly been shot at in the hills. So my travel credentials, I think, are fairly solid, don't you think, Will?
And it's a land of extremes because yet within that you've got this incredible beauty.
Yes.
Delicious, you know.
And I have to say, I feel quite honoured with the career I've had, that I've had these extremes of experience in many different countries at different points of their history. Yeah. Because of the age I am now, you know, that's many decades of travel and experience and meeting people. So I'm thrilled that, you know, Croatia's our first country.
It's brilliant. Well, as you know, the history of Croatian wine is quite interesting as well.
Tell me.
Been boning up a little bit. Well, as I said, viticulture, so, you know, the first vines, I mean, I think they've dated back to the ancient Greeks, possibly earlier. And as you said, on the island of Hvar, there is this oldest site of continued viticulture in the world, which dates back to the 4th century. But it's been a land that's been, you know, under lots of empires, the Roman Empire, the Ottoman Empire, the Habsburg Empire.
Yeah. And the funny thing now is Hvar is known as Party Island.
Yeah,
it's where people go to have raves. So perhaps that all links up nicely.
Absolutely.
With wine.
Should we have our last wine, which is one of my favourite wines from the club?
What colour is it?
It's white again.
Why haven't we got any red?
I apologise.
What's that red I'm looking at? We normally
have more reds than white. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. Are you obviously going straight in with my education?
Yeah, we're going straight. Well, it's a nice day, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, we're having this wonderful Indian summer in England.
It was just when you used that word, or I'd use that word, full-blooded red wine a bit earlier.
Yes,
and I just... I know.
Well, we'll have plenty of those.
What's that red wine then? Is that just window dressing?
That's from the Kunawara.
Okay. Then that's in Australia.
Okay.
But we are travelling the world in this series.
Yeah, I know.
And we're going to Australia next.
You're going to be so excited about my guests. Can I just say, Will doesn't yet know who all my guests are. And I've gone to a lot of trouble to link up each. It's nearly killed me. Can you imagine getting hold of loads of people and saying, you know, have you been to New Zealand or Argentina? You know, it was great because Claire Balding just immediately said, yeah, I've been to South America. I did the Paralympics in Argentina and I've been up the Amazon on a canoe. You know, it's brilliant. You know, and then lots of people have immediately
absolutely
engaged with a region.
Really good. I'm excited about this.
So we'll have a bit of travel,
a
bit of wine. Some people aren't so keen on drinking a lot. Other people have just
bring
it on. You got me at the word wine.
Right, our last wine, it's a leap up in quality from the last wine. A wonderful sort of straw colour.
Mm. Well, you've gone straight in with a sip on this one. Now, you're saying this is superior to the last one.
I say that. It's because it's straight Grass Venus. So the last one, Chardonnay always, it's like Merlot, always adds that immediate appeal. It's like putting cream on top of your coffee.
Mm.
Whereas this is for the real connoisseur. Yes. This is just a sort of straight black. It's so clean and pure and crisp. It might not be to your style. So I think the DNA of these three wines we've had, it's not the aromatics. They are less aromatic than wines you get in the Southern Hemisphere, places like Argentina or Australia, New Zealand. It's how they feel in the mouth. It's a mouthfeel and the
I'm
texture.
I'm going to go for mouthfeel.
You've got to imagine, we're at that secluded harbour with the turquoise water.
Yes.
It's 11:59.
Yes.
And the waiter, Dimitri, has just brought us this delicious Grass Venus.
Sorry, I was on the island with you. Mm. Oh, he's spitting his out. What a waste.
Take a sip, and then you look at the menu and you think, well,
has
to be grilled fish, doesn't it? Yeah, it has to be fish.
Yeah, you see, now I've gone into a kind of hallucinatory mode because obviously I haven't been spitting, so I'm in a different area than you in my mind, and I am on that port side, possibly. Which island? Maybe I'd choose Corcula because it was just so beautiful arriving, and you know, it was one of the first islands we went to, and it was just mind-blowing to be in the 13th century beauty. I think I like white wine if I'm there.
Yeah.
Your job is to get me to like white wine when I'm sitting next to you by the railway station at London Bridge.
So we've explored how preconceptions are very important and what you're thinking. So think of it, you could think of it like a gin and tonic. It's that burst of refreshment.
God, that was spooky. When you said that, that wine bottle fell off because you said gin and tonic. It's going, hang on.
And it gives you that, you know, immediate tangy refreshment.
Hit.
But can you remember the first glass of wine you ever had when you travelled? I mean, what was the first place you went to after Croydon?
It was Hong Kong, obviously. Yes. But before that, as a child, I'd never even been taken to a restaurant. I mean, you didn't, you know, if you lived in that environment, you didn't particularly go to restaurants. But I had a boyfriend who was half French. His dad was French. And through them, I was educated in wine a bit, and I remember very memorably a French exchange I went on when I was 15, and I went off to Paris. Oh. But your parents didn't know where you were going, really. You were given a slip of paper and told to find your way there. And I found my way to this place in the middle of Paris and knocked on the door expecting Monsieur Heller and his lovely family and two daughters to be there. No, just Monsieur Heller.
Oh.
The rest of the family never materialised. And I didn't speak very good French and he spoke no English. So I could never find out where the family were. And I had a very surreal time in Paris living with this French man. Quite innocent. He was perfectly charming, but there was just no sign of my, you know, French compatriot who I was going to learn the lingo with. And I spent the day wandering around Paris being bought glasses of wine by amorous Frenchmen, and I got very good at sort of saying things like, excuse me, could you remove that baguette from my armpit? But that was about it. Anyway, eventually I was just miserable.
Yeah.
I'd had a week of it and there was just no sign of a French exchange going on. So I rang my boyfriend, which again was very difficult to do. The telephones just didn't exist like that. You had to sort of beg someone you met if you could borrow to use the phone. I had no money.
Yeah.
So I rang my boyfriend and he picked me up in his Alfa Romeo. He dropped his job because he was 2 years older than me. He was working. Picked me up in his Alfa Romeo, open top. You could see Monsieur Heller looking down anxiously. And I just said, au revoir, Monsieur Heller. And we drove off to the south of France. And we went camping. And the funny thing is, Interpol weren't scrambled. No one knew. No one cared. No one asked when I got home why I had a suntan. But on that holiday, I drank a lot of lovely French wine. France always holds a dear place in my heart because it's where I really discovered red wine.
It's where all roads lead to in
all
wine.
Roads lead to Le Lavandou, as far as I'm concerned.
And it's nice when you're drinking abroad. I always just think, just go local. That's such good advice. Go local with food and wine.
Oh, God, it was that joy of buying some cheese and a baguette and a bottle of wine, and that's a feast for a king. That's what we lived off.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Where are you most looking forward to in this series? Where are we going?
Where are we going? We're going to New Zealand.
New Zealand, that'll be amazing. 8,000
miles.
Going
to Greece.
Greece.
We're going to South America, Canada.
Australia?
I've got a lovely guest for you for Australia.
Did you have a favourite wine today?
Well, thank you for introducing me to three and taking me on such a sort of lovely treasure hunt around Croatia. I really enjoyed that first white wine. I'm confused I'm saying that because I didn't think a white wine would sort of be ever my favourite at this stage of my education, I will. But I like the oiliness and the texture of it.
We sort of romped through. We had the Cucervaux Rosé to begin with, but the one you liked was the Maximo Oro, and it is white, and it's a medium-bodied white wine, and it's a white wine I think you could drink throughout the winter, and it has those, you're absolutely right, those sort of oily base notes, that base, wonderful rich taste. It's still coating our mouth, actually, as we're talking now.
Well, especially mine, you spat out. I kept mine in for quite a while.
And I rather like the third as well, but God, if you ask me which one I like, I quite like the rosé. But I think I'll go for number three because it was just a little bit more
sophisticated. Go on, sir.
A little bit more of its place.
Yeah. Well, that's good that we're not just plumping for the same.
Yeah. No, but I did like number two as well. Well, cheers,
and Angela. I'm very looking forward to some red wine.
Cheers.
Cheers, everyone. I love that. Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce, the producer Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description. And you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
But from all of us here at the Tap and Bottle, thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.